Hey everybody, this is James and this is Home from the Therapist. I want to thank you for listening. And it's been a little while again since the last podcast. I've had some gaps. I do the podcast when I go to see my therapist, and sometimes there are gaps from when I go see him. Sometimes I see him more often. I don't know how you guys want your content. If in the meantime you want me to do episodes in between from a studio or whatever, I'll look to do that. But you can let me know by going to our webpage at www.homefromthetherapist.com or hfttpodcast.com. You can also find us on social media at hfttpodcast. We're on Anchor FM at HFTT podcast, I'm pretty sure. If you want to support the podcast, help us out, maybe get me a producer, because I'm not a producer, as I'm so fond of saying. You can feel free to contribute at anchor.fm. Neat, I got an alert. Or you can contribute on Patreon. We're on Patreon, Home from the Therapist. So thank you for listening. I hope you enjoy this week's episode. And have a great day. Hello everybody, this is James, and this is Home from the Therapist. I appreciate you guys joining. I know it has been quite a while, and I'll get into that a little bit, talk about that shortly. I just am getting out of the office, started the car up, putting on the seat belt, and just reeling from the session that I had. And so I want to lay that out for you. And hopefully I'm coherent. There has there's been some change, and I need to kind of lay it out. And you'll excuse me if I have missteps. So in December, my grandmother, who lived with my parents, she was 95 years old, wonderful woman who went through the Depression, went through World War II. My grandfather was off serving in North Africa. She stayed at home and birthed and raised my uncle, raised two other men that I admire greatly, my father and my uncle, the younger uncle of my father's, who passed away a couple years ago, and who I'm named after. I actually, my middle name is his name, Keith. And, she raised these kids. She was a great example. Growing up and even now when I reflect back, and then in her later life, became close to her because we moved here. We wanted to be around my parents to help out, and they helped us, and I formed a very close relationship with my grandmother that I think, that I thank God for, because I wouldn't have had it otherwise had he not blessed her with longevity. However, She didn't get sick. She didn't develop a disease. She wasn't hurt. She didn't fall and become injured. Old age happened. We just watched over the course of several months, we watched her unravel until she was barely there. Her body began giving out, and her heart was so strong, and you could see that heart fighting, even though she knew that she had a place with her God, that she was going there. Her heart still raged on to the end. And she's the strongest one of two, three extremely strong women in my life. But that was an example of strength that I've never been privy to. And I'm honored to have known her. So that was a very difficult time for our family. While it wasn't completely unexpected, as I said, it was over the course of several months. When someone lives to be 95 years old, you get to kind of believe that they're not going to die, that they're going to live forever. They're going to live as long as you. And we were okay with that. And, she exhibited a toughness that I don't know that it exists in people anymore. You see people give up early in their lives. Early, they decide that they're broken, or they're hurt, or they're sick, or they're whatever, and they don't either believe that they can fight it or that they want to fight it, that they're more comfortable or that it's easier giving up. And that was never an option for this old German woman. Now, she's 100% American. She was born here, but I call her German because I actually met her grandmother. And not many people can say that they met their grandmother's grandmother, but I did. She was 100 years old. So when we went to visit her in Illinois, it was an event. And when you're little, you remember events. Those are the things that stick with you. And it's not because there were any pictures taken that I see that reminds me. This is one of the few things that is in my memory that I can remember. I mean, I can't remember last week, but I can remember meeting my grandmother's grandmother. And my grandmother's grandmother was off the boat, as they say, off the boat from Germany. She had an accent, and she still mixed her English with German words. And so that, I feel that connection and that closeness. I know that, my grandmother was even more close to that. And I attribute that, we tried to do some DNA that unfortunately didn't work with Ancestry. They couldn't get a sample. But just because we wanted to learn more about her lineage, we know that at least on that side, she was very German. But there are some areas we're not sure whether there. We think that there's some French, but she had just beautiful olive skin and dark hair and features. And she's a strikingly beautiful woman that she held on to even to 95 years old. It was a rare thing. And that beauty was more than on the outside. She had a beautiful heart that she was very reserved about. She learned to, I think through her life, to be very quiet and to be reserved. But once you got past that, or you're in the situation where she allowed for it, you saw who she really was, and she was a fantastic woman. So she elected to be cremated because my grandfather was cremated, and for the time of his passing until her death, he remained in an urn on the mantle at my father's house where she lived. So it was her wish that she was also cremated, to be and interned with him. And as he is a U.S. Army Air Force World War II veteran, and for those who don't know, the Air Force developed out of the Army. The Army first began having planes flying, and then those flyers, as the Army does, they segment things off for strategic tactical purposes, and so, you know, your aviation, your flying becomes its own thing, and then it develops into the different roles that it does. So anyway, that became large enough that the decision was made to make it into its own force, much like the Marines come out of the Navy. But at the time my grandfather was in, it was still just before that. He always told me that he was in the Air Force. However, my dad says that he always told him that he was in the Army. But I can appreciate that duality in his identity, because I understand now the history of it. Anyway, I was also close to my grandfather, being as I was third generation Army. My father was in the Army, I was in the Army, and I was also in the Army Aviation. So I had a special connection with my grandfather. And so after my grandmother's passing, it was arranged that my grandfather had a right to be interned in a national cemetery under military honors. And so he was interned at a national cemetery in Dayton, Ohio, not far from Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, along with my grandmother. The two of them were given a military funeral burial. Well, you know, there was an actual burial in front of us, but it was described to us, you know, how they would be placed, the headstone, and, you know, certificates and stuff. There would be a thank you letter from the president. Some things that, as a veteran, you don't think of. And if you're a veteran watching, and I encourage anyone, there's military funerals are, they're federal, they're national ceremonies. And while you want to be respectful to the grieving families, you know, I do believe that you can attend those at least and observe them from a distance, and that no one would take too much offense to that. But the weight of that ceremony is tremendous. And it was wonderful. It was beautiful. I was proud. And I didn't get closure. As a matter of fact, it brought things up. It brought back the memory of my grandfather and the missing of him. And so that was a shared grief that came up. And then, of course, my uncle's passing a couple years ago. You can't have the conversation without his memory being brought up. So it was a very difficult time. And then top of that, my wife's mother passed away a year ago, Christmas Eve. And so it was the year anniversary of that. That was my mother-in-law. There's things that, she's not going to be happy about because she wants certain things for her daughter. And as the husband, I may have a different plan. So we didn't always see eye to eye on things, but I loved her and I miss her. And so there's that grief as well. So it was a very, very difficult December. And I've been coming off a very strong run as far as my treatment was concerned. I've been very successful as I see it. But we had, in the November time frame, I think, I decided to make an adjustment to my medication in an effort to kind of extend the effects of the medication. While I was being successful, it wasn't a lasting success throughout the day. I wasn't having the effects weren't there long enough. And we also felt that, there's a possibility that given the right medication that I could have more. So, you always think you could have more. So we made adjustments and those adjustments were not successful. And that is from going from a place where you're doing well to a place where you have all the old problems you had before. It's very frustrating, especially when you make a medication change. You have to commit to it. You have to give it, at least 2 weeks. And I don't care whether it's a quick release or an extended release or whatever. You have to, because there is a change that is going to happen. You're going to react to the medication, and that reaction needs to become consistent with your treatment. I gave it its due. We saw that it wasn't working. We made an adjustment again. When I say we, this is my wife and I, with at times talking to my doctor who writes the prescriptions. This is all in coordination. And we made changes, and those changes didn't work either. And so we decided to go back to where I was. go back to the safe spot. But now I'm frustrated. Now, at the same time, there was an adjustment made to try to control or further some of the other treatment plans that I'm on, specifically around depression and anxiety and around the treatment of fibromyalgia. Fibromyalgia causes, I have chronic pain, and somebody that doesn't have chronic pain, I don't know how to get you on board with it, because it really seems like people who don't have chronic pain, they just don't understand. So I'm not really going to try, unless, hit me on all the social media and say, hey, suck it up, buttercup. I want an explanation, but I'm not going to explain. I'm not going to get into what chronic pain is or how debilitating it is. But it is a sliding scale. It's not just on or off. There are levels where you can tolerate, and there are levels you can't. And I was getting to levels where I couldn't tolerate. And I also felt like I could use some help in some anxiety and depression-related areas. So we made an adjustment. We stopped one, started another, and had a huge, I feel like a really huge success in my treatment of depression and anxiety. I believe that I'm the word that came to me today in my session was that it was effortless, my attempt to stay out of depression and to be more upbeat, if you will. Now, I'm not trying to run around shooting sunshine out of my rear end and wearing flowers on my vest or anything like that. I'm just saying that I believe that everybody has depression. I believe that everybody has a right sometimes to be depressed or to be upset. This last month, with the passing of my grandmother, I absolutely felt like anyone in that position, including my family members, had a right to their grief. And if that grief led them into an area of depression, they have a right to that. I didn't give myself any limitations. I didn't say that I felt like I wasn't going to be depressed. I didn't say to myself, hey, through this, you're gonna be upbeat. You're gonna show them whatever that means, right? I just was able to be generally happier. It doesn't mean I didn't cry. It doesn't mean I didn't grieve. It doesn't mean I was upset. But I said to the doc today that depression, historically to me, depression has felt like a warm bath. It's felt like I could just sink back into my depression and that it would flow around me and you can feel the weight of it as you drew down into it. And it was soothing and comforting and warm, and it isolated you from everything else. A bath is a very intimate experience. Short of being a child or being in a tub with one of my children when they were a baby, I don't know that I've been in a bath with another person. I think I may have done it with my wife before. But that is, in doing that, was a sharing a very intimate act with her. That is an exercise and a gift that you give your spouse or someone you care about. So, unfortunately, my memory fails me a lot. And I may have taken a bath with her. But that is, I'm just trying to enforce my metaphor here, is that depression is personal. It's isolating. It's comforting. You want to go to it sometimes. That you feel, and you get upset about it, but you do feel like you chose it. Sometimes you can be very indignant about it, that you have a right to that depression. That is historically, for a long time, for 25 years of my life, that's how I was. Not who I am, but how I was, how I traditionally would act. But this month, going through all of this, I did not feel that pull. I didn't. So I can only attribute that to that change in medicine. Now, I have had victories in my cognitive therapy, in my life, my spiritual life. I think there's a healing that has gone on. I know that there's healing that's gone on that's put me in a different place. And that very well may, that it absolutely has to be a contributing factor. But to me, my perception is that it is directly been related to that medication change. However, there's often the bad that comes along with the good. And that medication change really made me feel like I was no longer medicated for my fibromyalgia. The pain came back with a rage. And at the same time, I'm experiencing issues in my neck. I know from a previous x-ray that I had to have some arthritis that's developed in the disc there. It was clear to the person doing the x-ray, or at least that read the x-ray or whatever. And so I have an issue in my neck, and that is a persistent daily, I can't just call it a pain. It's discomfort, there's stiffness, and then there are all of these peripheral pains and aches and stiffness that goes along with it. And then at the same time, I do perceive that I am feeling these fibromyalgia pains that I had felt before. And then here it keeps going. I am suffering under a cloak of confusion. I have an inability to express myself, or at least I feel I do, whether this is speaking or writing or anything else. It's profound in my life. And it is an ocean. It is waves that come in. Oftentimes when I stumble finding a word, it causes a train wreck. There's a series of just like my memory process breaks down. Whether that's out of frustration, it is very frustrating. And I get very angry. Because I had periods where I didn't have that. My memory loss is considerate and debilitating. It's infecting every area of my life. I write notes down everywhere, on post-it notes, on notepads, on my Samsung Note, on my tablets, handwritten, desperate to cling on to information. And I, through years of continual practice, I always put my shoes, my coat, my keys, my wallet, all in the same place. If I take my watch at night, off at night, I put it in the same place, and I remember to put it on in the morning. It is this structure that I practice that aid me in being able to keep track of the important things, the fundamental things that I'm going to need. I need my wallet if I go out of the house, so it's over by the keys always. And so are my coats, and my shoes are right there. Because I don't want to run around the house trying to find shoes. I don't want to wonder where I flopped my coat, which couch or chair I put it on or whatever. That takes up too much of my day if I have those things going on. So through this And this is, I believe, is a technique that all ADHD people need to do. Or those suffering from traumatic brain injury. Because you need to simplify. You need to take the things that you can make easy and make it easy for yourself so that you can deal with the larger things. And I come in through the door and I always put my hat in the same place. I take my jacket off and put it in the same place. I take my shoes off in the same place. Wallet goes right there. I come in and I see the dogs and say hi to the family. I mean, that's my routine. In the last couple months, I've been leaving my wallet at places. I've been leaving my phones. I am a professional. I have a company-issued phone. I also have my personal phone from a military training perspective, which is really core to who I am. I hold it very close to some of these practices. Communication, I believe, is dire. It is something that must be the ability to communicate. This isn't about being on social media or being able to see websites, surf when you're somewhere. It's not about that. It's about if it's like when I take my son out, I tell him to put on a jacket every time. And he says, well, I'm not, I don't mind the this temperature. I'm fine. I'm just going to the car. And I tell him, well, what happens when we have a flat tire? What happens if for some reason we're forced off the road? You've got to have a jacket. If you've got to stand alongside the road, you need to be, if you're going outside, you need to be prepared to stand outside. That's my policy. And along with that, I maintain my communications network. I make sure I have a phone. At least one. If I forget my work phone, I have my personal phone, and vice versa. My work phone will stand in for my personal phone in an emergency. I always have a phone with me. The last 2 months, I don't. I forget my phones. I forget my wallet. I leave them places. I can't find my keys. Why did I put my jacket there? If, heaven forbid, my family moves something while they're cleaning, it's catastrophic. And I forget. I can't remember. My recall is non-existent. My grandmother passed away, and I remember things, but I don't remember a lot. There's not a lot of color there. There's not a lot of audio. There are flashes that I can't hold on to. My strongest memories, the things that I can hold on to, all happened to me in the early days I was in the military and my life before that. Essentially everything from the time I was 18 years old, I can remember those things. Now, yeah, you struggle with the first couple of years. Nobody remembers being two. But from the time that I really should have been remembering things, should have memories, I do. I might forget, details like people's names and stuff like that. But I have memories of, being there and doing the thing and things that were said, feelings that I had. And then when I was in the Army and I was in Germany with my unit, on two separate occasions, I suffered a traumatic brain injury. Now, at the time, that's not what it was called. It was called hitting your head. It's called getting knocked out, because that's what happened. I lost consciousness. There's no doubt. No doubt. The first time, it wasn't clear that that's what had happened. When I took the shot to the head, I fell over. But I remember, I can hear the impact in my head, to my head. And then I opened my eyes again, and I was on the ground looking up. At the time, we didn't try to make a big deal of it. Now, you have to understand something. If you're not in the military, haven't been in the military, when you are low ranking, and that means that you're new, you've only been in for a year or two, you haven't moved up the chain, as they say. You're given very little responsibility, and you're, they don't expect a whole lot of you, but they make clear what their expectations are, and they don't tolerate, going outside those things. And this helps condition you so that you can accept, more privilege and responsibility. In other words, basic training breaks you down to your core. They shave your head. They strip you of your identity. And then they build you a soldier identity. And I think some are more accepting of that than others. Some are in basic training, they some hold on to that identity stronger than others. I was during my time in the Army struggled to hold on to the identity that I thought that I had, that who I thought I was, or that I tried to be different. And that's just a rebellion. That's a rebellious nature. Not that I had traditionally ever had that, but I'll explain that in a bit. I was stripped of my identity, and I did take on that military identity, or at least what I did. The part that I did take on stuck. It was deep. It is deep. The warrior soldier that was built into me, that was trained into me, has never left. It is who I am. And I understand now that explains a lot about my personality now, how much I have continued to cling to that identity, even in my 40s here. Very involved and close to veteran organizations. I participate in a civic duty that is aligned with the military. I have a closeness with that has never left me. As a matter of fact, when I first separated from the military, I suffered a severe separation anxiety. What I didn't understand then was that I mentally panicked because I wasn't involved in the thing that I was closely identified with. Even though I accepted my discharge, I was discharged under medical terms. I was given an honorable discharge under medical terms. In other words, I got hurt when I was in, and I was no longer able to do my job. That's what it was. And that is an injury to the ego and to the pride. But I felt like, okay, let's start over and let's try again. Let's build. Let's be constructive instead of continuing to go down this road. being hurt and injured and not being able to do my job right and dealing with that frustration and all of that. I had physical ailments that made it difficult for me to walk and run, or stand for long periods of time. And that's unacceptable. That's, you know, those are parts of the job. Anyway, I went way down in a rabbit hole just now. If any of you listen to this podcast from someone who isn't suffering from these things, if you're looking, if you're a doctor, or if you're even someone who maybe you have a family member who's going through this, I don't know. Sometimes I just don't know what happened. I just don't know how I just went down that road. Talking about what I was talking about, I don't know where I am. I'm lost in the woods. I'm sorry. I don't feel like the host of a show. I don't feel like the talent. I just feel like I'm talking to you guys. I'm just voicing my frustrations and what I'm going through. I just looked up on the screen in my car, and SiriusXM is letting me know that Prince's Let's Go Crazy is on. Yeah, let's go crazy, James. Feel that way. Yeah, feel a little crazy right now. I don't feel out of control. I mean, I'm deliberate in my actions. I feel fully in control of myself, except this is a lot like being hurt or being injured or having a bum knee. I can't walk right. You know, I can't think right. Maybe this is how I got down this road, is I can't think right, because I attribute that whether there was a change in medication. I don't know if it if it's not treating something that is being problematic for me, or if it's exasperating a condition. I don't know. That's why I go to a doctor, and I have to talk to her about my treatment. At the same time, I was just in with a therapist, and that's what this show's about, right? You know, if I think back over the course of this show from what I remember, I started it because I was so struck with how I walk out of this office and how it can be so different each time. And does everybody go through that? Does everybody, am I alone? Because a lot of times when you feel alone in things like this, it makes you feel crazy. So I kind of find myself asking that same question. Is anybody else out there going through this same thing? Or have you ever felt this way? And I feel like over the course of this podcast, over the course of the last year, that I've made such tremendous gains in all areas of my life. My focus on growth. I feel like those are channels, and that I put effort into those channels of my life, my spirituality, my relationship with my wife and families and friends, my work and my efforts to be better at my job and to grow in my career, my relationship with my God and my spiritual growth. Now, all of those things, all areas, my expectation, my desire, my goal is to grow. That's new. I've never had that before. Man, the coffee is really good today, by the way. For those of you who have listened before, you know that I get my McDonald's coffee. If I'm not running late, I try to get it before every session, and I don't drink all, you know, very fast, so it's always left over, and I'm drinking it in here and while I'm doing the podcast, and today it's good. I was just thinking, this is my brain. I was just thinking about, I'm sitting here and I'm not driving. We're not actually going home from the therapist. We're sitting in the parking lot of the therapist. It's a different show. But I'm too, this is why I started doing this podcast, because I remember coming out of here and pulling off the side of the road. Because it felt like I couldn't drive. I couldn't pay attention to driving. I couldn't pay attention to what I needed to do to responsibly drive a car, because I was so disrupted by my session. And there are some sessions where I feel like I've been brought back to a place, I've been brought back to my center. I feel like I come out of the sessions feeling better, but not today, because I've been having difficulty and I have suffered loss that I'm grieving. And I do have frustrations and concerns. And so instead of getting up and going about my day and worrying about work and, you know, making sure I've sent the right emails or that I've done the thing or called the person or, you know, get something done before I have the other thing to do. Today I stop and I come in and I talk to the doc for an hour and I take account. And when I take account of my life and the things that are going on, then and also hold myself accountable, that's what part of what the doctor does, is he helps me to remain accountable to my actions. So I'm committed and dedicated to this process. Why did I have such gaps the last 2 months? Well, there are circumstances that have to give precedence. I had to deal with my family and with the situation, and I couldn't come in. You know, my attitude was one of, you know, I'm doing good enough. The getting the job done, this is a military thing. Sometimes it doesn't matter how wounded you are, sometimes that you just have to get the mission accomplished. And the last couple months I was just trying to get the mission accomplished. And I think a lot of us get through doing our duty, doing our service, and you don't have the feeling of accomplishment because it's not something that you should feel good about. It's just something you got through. And sometimes the best you can do is to take as little loss as possible. And that's the way I feel right now. I mean, there are areas that I make gains in and I have successes in and that I feel pride and, you know, but there's the big thing. There's the big thing that has been going on and has been disruptive, and I've been going through that, and that's where I am. So there is another concern that comes along with this. You know, on top of all the pain, and the suffering and the frustration and the remorse and the loss, the grief. We've done some reading. It kind of happened on it by chance, and really did some in-depth reading on traumatic brain injury. Now, I know in the past I've talked about just a general sense or concern that not knowing, hey, I did take TBIs, is what I'm going through, is that an effect of the TBI, or is it a mental health issue, or is it a neurological, development? Is it neurological development? I don't know how they look at ADHD. Neurodivergent, I think, is how some people say it. That's not wrong. It's just how some of us are. That's how we're made. Maybe that's not how I'm made. Maybe I've suffered head injury twice, and that was enough to start a disease process that has affected the last 25 years of my life. And it's why that medications for treating the ADHD don't necessarily remain effective. And that's become a very strong concern. So that's where the podcast is now. And for those of you, I don't know if anybody out there was anxiously awaiting the next podcast, or I do know I get a lot of listeners, and I thank you for listening. I do feel some responsibility there. I want to, if you want content, I want to give it to you. Unless all of you are listening and hating what I do, and you just are listening to hear the next thing you hate, to see what I'm going to say next. That's the Howard Stern thing, right? I'm optimistic. I hope that either my listeners are looking at it from a scientific or, you know, a medical perspective, or that you're looking at it from a perspective of you can identify that there's someone else, that you're not alone. And you know, I see those listens, and I know that I'm not alone. I know there's people that are at least listening, that are interested, that want to hear more. I can't believe that I get a batch of new listeners every time I put out a podcast. Anyway, I don't have a goal to create a entertaining entertainment platform. This is my life, and I'm sharing it with you. And right now, I wouldn't say that I'm in a dark place. I don't feel depressed. I don't feel driven to depression. I'm frustrated. Maybe this is an aspect of anxiety. I feel like I'm dealing with it effectively. It's not that I don't miss. It's not that I don't have missteps. I have done things over the last 2 months that I've tried to not do, you know. I mean, we're talking about, you know, these are huge things. We're not like talking about an affair or anything. Holy crap. My relationship with my wife, I believe, has only strengthened, has only grown. I'm proud of that. as well as my relationship with my kids and my spiritual life. But my mind, these challenges that I have by ADHD or traumatic brain injury, that's what I'm struggling with. So I don't know what this podcast was before, but that's what it is now. And I'll be back at the therapist next week. I'm going to collect myself after this and start my drive home. I'm sorry I didn't share it with you. I don't know that I have a lot more to say right now. This is just all I can do is talk about where I am. And I have a plan. I'm going to talk to my doctor about medication. I have an appointment with my neurosurgeon who did my back surgery. He's a brilliant doctor who I'm going to have him look at my neck and the problems I'm having there. We'll hopefully determine whether, you know, the relationship between that injury or arthritic process, whether that is affecting or causing these other pain things, or whether these are in fact medication imbalances or what it is. So that's first thing. I have that appointment coming up very shortly. I've talked with my therapist here. Furthermore, I am going back to see a neurologist for the VA who specifically deals with traumatic brain injury. He's thought of very well in the community, from what I understand. He's respected. So I'm going to try to get back in to him. Sometimes with the VA that can be a long process, but hopefully it won't. So that's my plan is to go to the professionals. And all I can say for those who are listening, if you suffer under these same things and you don't know what to do, I just encourage you to do what I'm doing. That's all that I think maybe that I can offer as a learning aid today, is that this is how I go about. You say, how do you deal, or how do you cope, or you go to the doctors, you go to the professionals, you go to the people who are learned. I don't know everything, man. I certainly can't remember everything. So I go to the doctors and I take their advice. Most times I take my wife with me so she remembers everything. Or I take a printout from the doctor outlining what we talked about. Because I forget. I try to write down things before I go in because I forget. So that's what I can teach. That's what I can encourage. That's how I think I can be more, or you can be more productive in getting better, growing, or dealing with what's going on. So we're coming up on the hour. I was going to try to work in breaks at the half hours. And I'm sorry I didn't this time. It's been a while and I have a lot going on. I have a lot going on with me. I wanted to lay out there and I just couldn't break. You know, I say it time and again, I don't have a producer. This show, I'm sure, sounds very, very rough from other podcasts you might listen to. It's because I don't have a producer. And I'm not a producer. I'm not trained in that, or I don't practice that. I'm sure that in doing this over and over, I get better at it. Maybe. I don't know. I try to. So I didn't have somebody waving at me telling me, hey, you're up, coming up on the half hour, take a break. I don't have the very manufactured, designed format of a show, a radio show. Although I think that's what podcasts aspire to be, because radio shows have been successful, and you know, not that I necessarily want to be successful, but if there's benefit, I want to try to reach as many people as I can. So you can help with that by going to my website. And I'm such a mess right now. I can't even list all of those things to you. And I'm going to develop an intro as I always do, and I'll outline it all in that. I know that my podcast is Home from the Therapist. And you can put the Google to work and find me on social media. If you found this podcast, you'll be able to find everything else. Because I know that this podcast gets pushed out by Anchor.fm to all the other podcast platforms. So however you find it, backtrace your steps, do some searching. Please find my website, find me on social media, comment, spread the word. I have a page that you can be a part of. If I get people plopping in there, I'll give you updates. And I also do the Patreon thing. And you can give donations through anchor.fm if you want to contribute to the podcast. And certainly, if I got support in that area, I'll give support back. I'll give you some extra audio, maybe let you in to my life a little bit more. So that's what I can commit. But again, that's what the show is, and that's my obligation. Last one is that I am not a doctor. I can't give you medical advice legally. Certainly not. There's no professional obligation there. I have no oath. Get your advice from a medical professional. I'm just a guy, and I might be going through the same thing you are, or I might be an example for you to study. But I thank you for listening. And I hope you have a great day. Again, this is James, and this is Home from the Therapist. Goodbye.